Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. Guys, we got a great show today. Lots of good things. The Lakers offseason not quite going as planned. Wait till you hear the latest with that. Giannis and the Bucks bounce back in game two as predicted, but we're going to start with the late game out
west. You guys did the wife swap. Y'all got y'all's outfits coordinated. That was nice. I like it. Let's get this thing cracking.
We will discuss later. Rockets.
We might discuss later.
Rockets Warriors game two. Remember, Houston trying to even up this series. Scary moment early on. James Harden had his eye basically gouged by Draymond Green. He'd leave and return. He complained of blurry vision after the game. He finished with 29. Wasn't enough to beat the defending champs. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson combined for only 41 points, but Kevin Durant gave you 29, 5, and 4. Wasn't the 40 we had seen, but it was 29. Warriors win 115-109. They now take a 2-0 series lead. Here's Kevin Durant after the game.
Most definitely wanted to take care of home, especially after how last series went, losing two of them at home. So I think we're just a little bit more focused to finish games, no matter if we were up 15 and they still cut it down. And I think I love how we stayed poised through it all. You know, I think we only was able to do that because what we went through in the first series. And, you know, so glad that we was able to finish it out at home, but we know these guys are even more dangerous at their crib. So us on the road, they're even more dangerous.
All right, Nick, we kept talking all about the officiating coming into this game. This doesn't seem to be the theme coming out of this game. How did the Warriors take care of the Rockets in game two?
And credit to the officials. The officials were not part of the storyline. They did a great job. It was a fairly officiated game and a well-called game. But to answer your question, they came out ready to play, and the Rockets did not. Rockets down 15 points halfway through the first quarter. From that moment forward, they outplayed the Warriors. They tied them in the second quarter. They won the third quarter. They won the fourth quarter. But when you start the game in the first quarter with 9 turnovers, when you allow 8 offensive rebounds in the first quarter for your opposition, when they're not a great offensive rebounding team, when you're sloppy with the ball, when you only make 2 2-point field goals in the first quarter, and your opponent, the 2-time defending champ, they're the team that comes out hungrier. They're the team that comes out more desperate. They're the team that comes out where every defensive possession, it's rotations and people meeting you at the rim. To be totally honest, you deserve to lose. The Rockets were fortunate to be in the game after the first quarter, to be in the game at halftime, to have it within 3 points late in the fourth quarter because they didn't have the sense of urgency the moment required, and they didn't come out like a team that felt that the way they had spoken the days leading up to the game. We should have won game one. We were the better team game one. They came out like a lazy January game. Okay. And now they got into it, but you can't give the Warriors 6 minutes to build a lead. You can't give this team an edge in that building. So the Rockets had legitimate complaints after game one, and they undercut a lot of that with how they came out in game two. The Warriors played fine. They didn't play a great offensive game. Steph struggled again. KD was the least efficient he's been in this entire incredible 6-game stretch. And the Rockets couldn't take advantage because early in the game they were throwing the ball all over the gym, and they're letting Alphonso McKinney get tip dunks on putbacks because nobody's boxing out. This is a really disappointing effort in the first quarter for the Rockets. They weren't able to overcome it.
Yeah, they didn't make the type of adjustment you would expect in game number two. You would expect a little more desperation from the Rockets in game number two because you don't want to go down with the Warriors having the home court advantage. But I like the fact that Kevin Durant talked about some of the things in series number one that was a problem for them against the Clippers. Number one thing was losing at home. So that was an emphasis for them coming in. We're going to make sure that we protect home court. And they came out because this is not about playing great basketball. This is about being efficient under the most amount of pressure and be able to get to your spot on the court and be able to make shots. You got to give a lot of respect to Golden State because coming into this game, yeah, all the conversation about the referees, I didn't think the game would be about the referees. They had 3 veteran refs in there because ultimately the guys on the court are going to make the difference. Houston, with Harden being injured earlier, man, they were kind of lost there for a little bit. Their bench, actually, if there's something to be encouraged about, their bench after 2 games, because Rivers was hurt in game number 1, didn't play. You could see them missing that. But they struggle offensively if Harden is not playing at his highest level. And to me, it's hard to be a championship team when your number one threat is James Harden and the way that people are playing him in the playoffs, where it's becoming harder and harder for him to score or be as efficient as he was during the regular season.
Yeah, there's no way you can rely on that bench and the role players as a sustainable way of staying in this series. But we'll talk much more about James Harden, but between his injury and however that limits him and the fact that this team is now down 0-2, is there any chance the Rockets can make this a competitive series now?
Yeah, they have to go and take care of home. Game three becomes a must-win, and assuming they win game three, game four is close to a must-win. The only reason you would say it's not is because we have seen teams come back from 3-1 down. But they obviously have to win game three, and what they need is, I thought Harden played a much smarter game in game two despite the eye injury. He was obviously more efficient. He went to the rim when it was available to him. And the Rockets, you said before the game, C, that they need to try to get Clint Capela more involved. They did get him more involved, but it wasn't very successful. What I think they are realizing, and what we've realized after two games, is Kevin Durant, as a rim defender against Clint Capela, he wins that matchup. We think they're undersized when they start the Hamptons five because Draymond is the center in name. But Kevin Durant becomes the guy who is meeting Clint Capela at the rim. Clint Capela is not much stronger than Durant. He's not any taller than Durant. And Clint Capela got dominated in his matchup last night. And it didn't help that the Rockets, while Austin Rivers was good off the bench, Daniel House, who had been one of their top reserves, he played 5 minutes early and then was relegated to the bench for the rest of the game because he wouldn't box people out because he wasn't doing his job. Iman Shumpert came in the game, and he thought he had the neon green light. 4 minutes, 4 3-point attempts, go to the bench. So the Rockets can do things better. I thought Harden played really well. I thought the eye didn't affect him that much. I thought that his defense was actually quite good. He was above his season percentages on threes and twos in this game. So I don't have any beef with how Harden played. But the Rockets, you can't beat the Warriors if they out-rebound you and if you turn the ball over more than them. You're not going to be able to beat them.
But this is also why the Warriors are so good, because Durant doesn't go for 40. He just goes for 29. But, you know, then you have Steph Curry, and he doesn't have a great night. But, you know, then you have Klay Thompson, who finally got his shots and stepped up. You can keep going down the line, and the Rockets just don't have the same depth after Chris Paul. It just doesn't seem to be all fitting together.
Right. They don't have the same depth, but you're off to a good start when you got KD, Steph, and Klay. But to me, the difference in this is the Hampton Five. Andre Iguodala, man, somehow has found the fountain of youth. Leads the NBA in 8 playoff games. He's got 19 dunks. Now, he's something with his legs. He didn't have these legs during the regular season. Draymond looks like he's lost 20 pounds. Both of their scoring averages. Iguodala, his point total is doubled in the playoffs. Draymond is back shooting the ball, distributing the ball. And Houston doesn't have an answer for them. When they try to trap in the pick and roll, they give the ball to Draymond at the top of the key or at the free throw line. He is orchestrating the offense from there, and they are taking the Rockets apart. To your Clint Capela, the reason why he doesn't match up well is because he doesn't have a post game.
Right.
He does not have.
All he has is the lobs.
That's all he's got. It's hard to be physical when you're in the air.
Right.
So Kevin Durant can match him there. So it's going to be, you know, to me, Houston needs to be very, very careful. Because we talked about last year's chance and this year's opportunity. People say, oh, Houston's better this year. Well, let me tell you something. I don't think they're better. Matched up against Golden State, seeing two games. And let's not forget last year, they got the 3 wins. So to me, last year, was that really the best opportunity? And now looking at with them down 2-0, I would agree with what my opinion was several days ago, that last year's opportunity, I believe, was the one that they missed out on.
Last year's opportunity could end up being the best opportunity they have, even if this ends up being the best team that they've had. But, yeah, you can't just toss the ball down to Capela and ask him to go to work. He has his only offensive move is a tip-in or a lob. Or when James Harden on pick and roll, he rolls the basket in a lob. But to your point on the Hamptons 5C, the numbers are jarring on it. Just look at it. They've played 96 minutes in the series, 48 with the Hamptons 5, 48 with any other lineup. They are dominating the Rockets on the offensive end and overall with the Hamptons 5, and the Rockets are beating them with any other lineup out there. The difference between this year and this series and previous years is they were never playing the Hamptons five half the minutes. You would see the Hamptons five in key moments. You'd see them for the final 6 to 8 minutes of a game. But if they're able to play, if that is sustainable, if you can play those five guys in half your minutes, and they're starting the series as they did in game one with those five guys. They didn't go to that until, I think, game four of last year's series. Yeah, the Rockets are in trouble. On Draymond and Iggy, Draymond's got an all-time great NBA quote. He said there are 82-game players and there's 16-game players. I'm a 16-game player. He and, meaning 82-game regular season, 16 wins you need for the playoffs. He and Iguodala right now look like they were operating in second gear throughout the regular season, and they revved it all the way up to fifth for this series. Iguodala had the first three baskets, free throws, baskets of the game for the Warriors, and they were fine with it. Those two guys have been great in this series.
All right, Warriors jump out to a 2-0 lead in that series. Coming up, we'll talk about the other big game of the night. Did Giannis and the Bucks figure out the game plan for taking down the Celtics? That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey, guys, it's Nick Wright. A quick word from our friends over at Indochino. Did you know that made-to-measure suits fit better compared to generic off-the-rack suits? Many say that a man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is exactly what you need. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, not to mention the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. So here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom of your choice located across the U.S. and have them take your measurements personally. Or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, both inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices and then kick back and relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple weeks. This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering the code FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. Again, that's Indochino.com. Promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deals for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go back.
Welcome back. We'll get to the Celtics Bucks in a second, but first, Rockets, Warriors. Klay hits Draymond with the touch pass, then Draymond throws the alley-oop to Andre Iguodala.
You said it earlier. See, Iguodala leads the playoffs in dunks, which is, I didn't know that. That's an unbelievable stat for a guy who all year long looked like he was nearing the end, rejuvenated in the playoffs.
Yeah, every once in a while I get a rent-a-stat guy.
Same game. James Harden could barely see the rim, but it didn't stop him from putting Andre Iguodala this time on skates before knocking down the tray.
Well, Harden was playing really poorly before the eye injury. It was briefly at the beginning of the first quarter.
Yes.
Once he came back from the eye injury, he was playing great. He was attacking when necessary.
Played a little more under control.
Absolutely.
Less just vision wasn't enough. Better. Celtics Bucks, Jaylen Brown driving to the bucket, sees Giannis, goes 180 for the circus layup.
When he first took off, I said, he get ready to punch on Giannis again because he dunked on him in game number one. Giannis got up so high, though, he had to change it up. Great shot by Jaylen Brown.
This was when this was still a game, and
yes,
then the avalanche came.
Same game, Giannis throwing down the emphatic dunk after muscling through Jason Tatum.
This also was early on when it was still a basketball game. Giannis was trying to play through contact more last night. It was a key to the Bucks.
Yeah, and he read their
success.
Defense a lot better. Read where the double team was coming from. Here, decides to go to his left hand because the double team was off to the right-hand side. Better decision-making than he did in game number one.
Tough night for Jason Tatum. All right, sticking with the series, this one might have come down to Giannis and Kyrie. If you'll recall, remember, Giannis said he'd make zero adjustments after a terrible game one loss, and that move paid off. The Greek freak returned to his MVP form after a slow start to the game, pouring in a game-high 29 points, 10 rebounds. while Kyrie Irving had a night to forget, finishing with just 9 points on 4 of 18 shooting from the field. Bucks win 123-102. That series now even at a game apiece. Here's Giannis after the win.
Last game won. The points don't matter, but at the end of the day, you know, you got to come out and, you know, win game two. You know, you get back on track, and that's what we did tonight. That's what, how we've been inspiring all season long. That's what's great about this team.
There's no extra burden. This is what I signed up for. This is what Boston traded for me for. So being able to go back, get back in the trenches, get ready for, you know, another battle on Friday. This is what you live for. So, you know, basketball is fun when it comes like this, when you have to respond. And, this is a type of basketball you want to be playing at this time of year.
All right, CeCe, a lot of storylines in this one. What, though, was the actual key to Giannis and the Bucks bouncing back in this game?
Giannis said before the game they weren't going to make any adjustments, but it's impossible to not make some adjustments. Even if they say, you know what, we're going to get back to how we won 60 games. Well, that would be an adjustment. They played at a faster pace. Giannis went to the rim before the defense of the Celtics could get set up, and they relied on Chris Middleton to be able to get the game going. Because let's not miss, Giannis was 3-11 at halftime. Chris Middleton kept them in this game where Boston had control of this game. Chris Middleton and his shot making kept them in the game. And then the Avalanche, as Nick will say, came in the third quarter where Giannis really started figuring out the Celtics, and he ended up dropping 15 on them. But from a team standpoint, this is how they played during the regular season. Their bench played a lot better, made those positive adjustments that we thought that they would make. And Giannis was able to maintain enough until halftime, and then in the third quarter, he looked like the Giannis that we had seen, the reason why he was a leading candidate to be MVP this year.
And in the first half, while he only made three baskets, he was getting to the free throw line repeatedly. He was racking up fouls on the Celtics bigs, which was key, a key part of the Bucks having that four-point halftime lead. And they did make one significant change.
Yes.
I thought it would be cutting Connaughton's minutes. It instead was removing...
They doubled down on Connaughton.
And Connaughton paid him off for
yes.
it, by the way. But it was removing Sterling Brown from the starting lineup, putting Mirotić in the starting lineup. So now all of a sudden, and I don't mind them doing that because they think Malcolm Brogdon's coming into the starting lineup at some point anyway, take his spot back. They were playing four bigs and Eric Bledsoe.
Not necessarily strategy standpoint, but Sterling Brown did have an injury, so he was questionable. But that was an adjustment they made. If he was 100% healthy, I don't know if that. But for a team that wasn't going to do anything, they made a lineup change for game number two.
They made a lineup change, but what they, to me, was most notable, and I think a lot of people in the audience understandably probably weren't watching the Bucks super closely all year, that explosion in the third quarter, this is what the Bucks do. They, in their last game against Detroit, they were trailing by four midway through the third quarter of the closeout game. They went on a 45-10 run to end that series. 45-10 run over a little more than a quarter of basketball. Last night against the Celtics, it was 74-71 Bucks, 3-point lead with 7 minutes left in the third quarter. It was a good game. It was a close game. The Bucks had held a 2-6 point lead most of the way, but the Celtics were right there. And they pulled off a 31-4 run. And it's mm-hmm. over. It's 105-75. Mm-hmm. The reserves are in. Good night. This is the best three-point shooting team in the league other than the Houston Rockets. And when you shoot that volume of threes, you play that level of defense, and your best player isn't one of the reasons you shoot threes. He's one of the only guys now in this series he's shot some, but throughout the regular season he
yes,
wasn't shooting threes.
Absolutely.
They can beat you so many different ways, and where I will give Giannis a ton of credit is he had, in that first half, it felt like four could have been and ones and they rolled out. He didn't get frustrated.
Yes, he very kept, aggressive.
Kept attacking. And so that's how you shoot 18 free throws. A guy who I think shot the second most free throws in the league this year, or third most, Harden, Embiid, Giannis. He kept attacking, and that is what kept the Bucks in the game before the Avalanche hit.
How much of this, though, was the Bucks figuring it out, Giannis going back to his regular season form, and how much of it is that the Celtics just collapsed in the third quarter and Kyrie could not get anything going?
Well, they couldn't make shots. But to say that Boston struggled offensively and you're surprised, man, like, well, you haven't been watching them play.
because they're going to struggle offensively sometime. We knew that the desperation in Milwaukee, we knew that you don't win 60 games and get to the second game, home court advantage, and decide, you know something, we're just going to allow this to happen. No, they were in a desperate situation. Boston was in control of the game for the first quarter and a half.
Yep.
But Milwaukee did make adjustments. I think the Mirotić, that substitution right there, what did it do? Because in game one, what were they successful at? Defending Giannis at the rim. Mirotić in the game at the three-point line. You can't have that extra body. He removed, so Giannis had more space. Middleton had more space, and their role players played better. So this is what you expect from the team, and they must win. They got the best record in the NBA. They had to win. I would have been more shocked if this was a close game because of the level of desperation that the Bucks were facing.
All right, so and people are going to talk about Kyrie, and I understand the numbers are worst percentage shooting of his career in a playoff game. The only game that were statistically was worse was a game where he got hurt early and had to leave early. So people will call this the worst playoff game of Kyrie's career, and they're probably right. But they shouldn't overreact to it. But you also understand why it happened. The reason you shouldn't overreact is Kyrie has, because of the style of play, because he takes such difficult shots, contested fadeaway jumpers, about once a series against the Pacers. Oh, he had a 4 of 13. In his last playoff series with the Cavs, he had an 8 of 23. In the series before that, he had a 4 of 11. Kyrie, about once a series, has a really tough night. That's given the way he plays, it's not shocking. And he's still, despite that, he is a great, great player. What's concerning for Boston is this. Milwaukee switched way more in this game than they did in game one. And what they saw was Kyrie, when he was up against bigger defenders, so when he was up against anyone other than George Hill or the other guard whose name I'm forgetting at the moment, Hill or Bledsoe, he was 0 for 9. Whether it was Mirotić, whether it was Giannis, whether he got switched out even on Brook Lopez, he could not make a shot when the bigger defender was on him. Milwaukee's going to do that again in game three now. They will switch everything with Kyrie, even if it means a bigger defender gets on him, because that appeared last night to be an advantage. Kyrie's got to make the adjustment of not take those contested jump shots, and when you have the bigger guy on you, go to the basket as one of the best finishers we've ever seen.
Well, one of the problems was the physicality of the playoffs and Milwaukee's length at the rim. He's having a hard time finishing over them. He had a couple spectacular finishes in game number one. But in game number two, that's the reason why he had to settle for those jump shots, because the overall size that the Bucks have there.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, is the offseason already in shambles for LeBron and the Lakers? Haven't talked about them in a while. Oh. We will next on FS1.
Shambles? It's May 1st.
The 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off June 7th. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champions head to France, looking to win an historic fourth World Cup. All matches will be live here on Fox and FS1.
Can't wait for it. One of the best events every 4 years.
It's going to be fun. Time now for us to go viral. Panthers dual threat running back Christian McCaffrey had over 1,900 yards along with 13 touchdowns last year. And if his offseason workouts are any indication, he might improve on those numbers. Look at that. The Panthers posting this picture of McCaffrey looking jacked.
What are your thoughts, C?
No, he looks good. It's kind of the angle, too. He's not that big. I did a Panthers game last year. He's one of the best athletes we have in the NFL, one of the best conditioned athletes, but it's kind of the angle. His arms aren't that big, but... Now, that would be a shock.
That's four Nick Wrights in that.
Yeah,
person.
Like Nick, if Nick woke up and saw his body like that, his face would look like that.
Not interesting.
Why?
Well, it's just, it's not what I'm into, not what my wife's
into.
It's not
the
physique. Well, you don't, listen, let me tell you something.
Hold on, whoa, careful.
How do you know what your wife's into if you're not offering it?
What? Because we have these discussions.
We've had some discussions, too.
If it means something to her, I do
because
that.
Because why would she want anything else if she has all this?
All right, Jenna, after you tried to do that wife swap thing yesterday ended with you and I being Jenna.
You're right. Jenna,
I'm very.
Trust me. Our spouses are into muscle and into body, Jenna.
You two, Jenna.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Mine's into charm.
I know.
And wit.
Yeah.
And humor.
And anything
and
else
two
you may
out of
have.
Three
there
on
you
that.
Go.
Which one?
The charm and the wit, good sir.
Stories to start your morning brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Love you, Nick.
I think she's doing community service.
Oh, Joel Embiid recently revealed he gets 6 treatments a day on his injured knee. Another big question, will Embiid be fully recovered from that stomach virus that affected him in Game 1? Lots of questions around Sixers and Joel Embiid. See how much of this will affect their playoff run.
Oh, it's going to affect their playoff run. He's their best player. And the problem with the knee is that he's been injured since the All-Star break. He's missed a huge amount of time. And every game, he's just trying to recover. So the knee is not getting better. His stomach will be better. They gave him something for his bubble guts. That will be better. But the knee, it's going to be this way until the offseason.
Here's the problem for Philly. With a fully functional Joel Embiid, we were talking before the show, they were going to be in a rough spot against the Raptors. With a compromised Joel Embiid, they have very, very few paths to victory that don't involve Jimmy Butler. The Game 2 Jimmy Butler, be in Game 3, Game 4, Game 5, Game 6 Jimmy Butler, and he hasn't shown that level of consistency since he got there.
Maybe they need to give your boy Ben Simmons some rest, man, because he's exhausting himself on the team.
You totally misinterpreted that comment yesterday, and that's fine. It's no problem. I'm not worried about that.
I mean, I'm trying to look after Ben, you know?
Ben Simmons played more minutes than anyone's played in the playoffs all year, and he played him mostly on Kawhi Leonard.
How old is he?
But it's not about age, see? All right. Impact in the moment.
Moving on, Celtics, Bucks, Game 2. Jason Tatum's shooting woes continued. He finished with just 5 points, going 2 of 10 from the field. Celtics lose 123-102 to even that series. Nick, how worried should Boston be about Tatum's struggles?
I wouldn't be too worried. And now, listen, my friend Chris Mannix sat here yesterday and said, Jason Tatum is not going to go 2 of 7 again. And Mannix, you are right. Instead, he went 2 of 10. But like, I think in this series, you should expect 20 to 25 points a game from Tatum and Brown combined. Brown's picked up the slack in each of the first 2. Tatum will bounce back. He's a good player. Scoring is the thing he does really well. It's just been a tough matchup for him because the Bucks have such overwhelming length, and he has a bigger person on him almost every possession.
Actually, Celtics fans, they should be encouraged. Leaving Milwaukee. Milwaukee's got the best record in the NBA, 1-1. Their second best player's not playing well. So when I go back to Boston, man, I'm feeling good about Tatum getting some buckets to go in. I would run some sets for him early so he can see the basketball going in, try to get him on a hot streak in that first quarter of game number 3.
All right, on to the Rockets and Warriors in game 2. Scary moment early in this one as James Harden gets whacked in the eye by Draymond Green. He would leave with a lacerated eyelid, but return later on, though his 29-point effort would not be enough. Warriors win 115-109. They take a 2-0 series lead. Here's James Harden on how the injury affected his night.
Do you have trouble with your vision on the court?
Can't see nothing.
Whooped out.
Barely can see.
I'm sorry, what?
I barely can see.
I can't hear you.
Got you good.
Barely can see.
Oh, barely can see.
Yeah.
Were you able to get any relief from drops or anything else that they might?
Yeah, they put a couple of drops,
Man, he whooped out over here. He looked like Thriller.
A couple of drops to help it, you know, numb it a little bit. But, I mean, just all the lights was blurry.
What do you say? Looked like Thriller?
What? Yeah, look, his eye was bleeding. His eyeball
Both
was
of them.
Bleeding.
Yeah,
it was bad.
It looked terrible.
It was bad. It looked terrible.
How concerning, Nick, is this for Houston moving forward?
This is not even, to me, on a top 5 list of concerns. Unless someone's going to tell me all of a sudden that 2 days, 3 days after an injury like this, it gets extra inflamed. I didn't read anything about it. I'm obviously not that familiar with the cut eyelid, but I tried to read as much as I could about it before the show today. I mean, they don't play again until Saturday. Harden also was really, really good once he came back from this injury yesterday. He was careless with the ball, but his defense was as good as it's been all postseason, and he was as efficient as he's been this postseason. Quietly in this series, James Harden has scored the same amount of points on the same amount of shots as Kevin Durant. So, like, James Harden hasn't been the problem, and James Harden, I don't think the eye injury will be the problem moving forward. To me, there's a much longer list of worries for the Rockets. How good? Clint Capella paid $80 million. They don't have him on the court at the end of the game against the Warriors, and they can't dump the ball down to him, even though that's not the way they play. Chris Paul, aside from in the moment right after Harden suffered the injury where he had to take over, he wasn't having a great offensive impact on the game. Daniel House, one of their key reserves, where is he? So, like, those to me are much, in my eyes, much bigger concern than James Harden, what his vision will be on Saturday.
And how they're going to match up with the Hampton Five. Iguodala's been able to finish above the rim. 8 playoff game, 19 dunks, leads the NBA. We didn't see that. He hadn't played like that, especially as far as above the rim in a long time. And Draymond, it's obvious that he has lost 20 pounds, and he is playing at an all-star level. Distribution of the ball, the pace of the game, the overall rebounding. Yeah, those are the things I would be concerned about if I'm Houston before I go back home. Concerned about his eye, I wouldn't be concerned about his eye. In football, we get a lot of guys with eye injuries. And also, before everyone started wearing gloves, we started getting a lot of guys with scrapes and cuts on their eyes because it happens a lot. Defensive players put their hands on your chest, hands go up into your face, so you have a lot of eye injuries in the football game. So I think he will recover.
Well, I asked you about before the show because you were talking about how football guys, one of the reasons they started wearing the shields was to prevent some of these eye injuries. When you suffer an injury like Harden did, how many days is it affecting your vision out? Like how long, I'm sure playing wide receiver, you had guys scrape your eyes. How long will it affect his ability to see clearly?
Right, well, we don't know the severity of it. But the fact that he was able to come back in the game in the second quarter, those are very, very good signs. I think in the first 48 hours, it becomes very, very important to make sure the eye doesn't get inflamed. But I think on Saturday, he'll be back to close to 100%.
To me, this isn't an excuse for the Rockets in game two, and it won't be moving forward. The injury that probably won't, but has, to me, the highest likelihood of affecting the series is Steph Curry's dislocated finger on his non-shooting hand more than James Harden's eyes moving forward.
All right, let's move on to the Lakers now. When owner Jeannie Buss brought longtime friend Linda Rambis along with her to interview potential new head coach Monty Williams, well, that raised some red flags. Linda's the Lakers executive director of special projects and wife to team senior basketball advisor Kurt Rambis. But recent reports say agents and general managers are describing Linda Rambis as a, quote, shadow owner for the Lakers. All right, CC, do the Lakers have any chance to have a productive offseason if this is how they are doing business?
Man, you know something?
Here we go.
This is shocking to me because my experience with the Lakers, I've lived a very privileged life. 9th grade, my brother was drafted by the Lakers. At that time, Jeannie Buss's dad owned the Lakers.
Dr. Buss.
One of the most respectable sports figures ever that you ever want to meet. You're talking about recruit players. You're talking about a guy who had the heartbeat of the team. Nick, what was the conversation when Magic Johnson had a problem with the coach?
Well, an advisor goes to Dr. Buss and says, we got a huge problem. Magic's a young player now. Magic, they'd won a championship already with him. Magic's in year three. Says, we got a huge problem. Magic doesn't like the coach. Magic wants the coach fired. Dr. Buss, the legend says, chuckled and said, what's the problem? I guess we're firing the coach. And just move. And he, by the way, when you now look back, who should Paul Westphal or Irvin Magic Johnson? Right. It was as easy of a decision as Dr. Buss knew it was back in the early 80s.
And back as far as I can remember, they have been a class organization. He had his heart and thumb on the pulse of the league. Veteran players would come there and potentially play for less for the Lakers. I mean, he had a roster of superstars. I mean, it was just normal for the Lakers to be able to get star players and to be able to play. As far as changing the coach, decisions like that, we knew who the boss was. And he always did things in a very, very classy. And that's the reason how they won all those championships. You can't get the number of stars that they have for the last 50 years and say, what was it? Was it just LA? No. The Clippers were losing right across the street. Mm-hmm. Across town before they got in the same building. No, it's more than the city. And it was about Dr. Buss. And now if you're talking about who is interviewing the coaches, Linda Rambis. Now, to me, I would be upset if Kurt Rambis, her husband. So this is not a male-female thing for me.
And there's an element, C, where there was another report that whomever the new coach is going to be might potentially be pressured to have Kurt Rambis of a 65-164 career coaching record. Kurt Rambis, who in his two full seasons as a head coach won 15 and 17 games for the Minnesota Timberwolves, pressure to have that man, to have Kurt as an associate head coach on his staff. So why would maybe Linda Rambis be sitting in on these interviews? Why would an advisor of the owner be sitting in on head coaching interviews? One quick question, Monty. What are your thoughts on my husband as one of your assistants? This is ridiculous. And you said it's not a man or woman thing. And it's not, except for in this regard, it can be. And when it comes to Jeannie Buss. And I think my track record of being on the right side of issues will give me a bit of a wide berth on this. When a man passes on his sports franchise to his son, I think people are naturally skeptical. Does that son know what he's doing? Or is he just a rich guy's son? The dad built it, and then the son inherits it, and sometimes that son turns into a great owner, and sometimes that son turns into just the kid that inherited it. When Jeannie took over the Lakers from her brother, there was justifiably and rightfully such a celebration of a woman being in this position of power in the NBA at an unprecedented level that I think there was an element of not really peeling back the layers of, is she doing a good job? Does she know what she's doing? Because I wanted a woman to succeed in this role. And maybe Jeannie Buss will succeed in this role. But now that there is scrutiny on her, now that we are seeing what the organizational decision flow is, Linda Rambis and Kurt Rambis and Kobe's old agent are your entire brain trust. I read yesterday, the guy I've been calling for them to call, Gerson Rosas, the second smartest guy with the Houston Rockets, he's getting interviews. Not with the Lakers, of course, no, because why would you? Not when you have the Rambis family to lean on. LeBron takes all the heat on all this stuff. I almost want to flip the question. If LeBron wasn't there, would they have any shot at one of these free agents? If LeBron wasn't there, would this organization be anything other than a team in total disarray? Because since the season ended, they appear to be a team in total disarray.
There's like a bit of justification now that we're looking back and we're hearing all this stuff, why Magic just didn't want to be a part of this anymore. It seems really messy at the top. And you have to ask yourself, what is he thinking? What is LeBron James thinking with all of this? Because he's taken a step back. At least we haven't heard anything. We all assume he wants his guy Ty Lue in there. But if that doesn't happen, it seems like, I don't know, more question marks moving forward than not.
The problem is LeBron believes he can overcome it because they haven't made a bad hire, even though the process is messed up. Right. They haven't made a bad hire yet. When Luke Walton letting him go, that was a good decision. That's what Magic Johnson was going to do. But Magic Johnson was also going to get rid of Pelinka. So where they're going now is not where Magic Johnson wanted them to go. That's why he didn't even give Jeannie Buss the courtesy of calling her.
Well, and I think the other reason we now know Magic didn't give her the courtesy of calling her is he's getting these emails of these two guys talking trash on him.
Of course.
I mean, of reportedly Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka not knowing he's blind copied on all basketball ops emails, and there's going back and forth. It's like when you text the wrong person talking trash about that person. It's an awkward thing, tough to pull yourself out of it. Magic said, I think, man, like he said many times, I'm Irvin Magic Johnson. I don't need this. I don't need this. And so he walked away. LeBron is not in position to walk away.
Yes.
And LeBron is there. And now, because it doesn't look like they're going to hire the smart guy, doesn't look like they're going to hire a real president of basketball ops, we don't know who the coach is going to be, it's going to be, fairly or unfairly, on LeBron to convince someone to come play there. You and me can go do it. Let's go do it. Forget all the rest of the noise, and the weather's really nice, and the jerseys look cool. Like, that shouldn't be the Lakers'
pitch. You got the same weather for the Clippers now.
Absolutely right.
Good point.
And they have Jerry West in charge.
And Doc Rivers.
Not the Rambis.
But the Lakers have Linda Rambis.
Yeah, so Linda and Kurt. Absolutely, Kurt.
Take a break.
Stay off Twitter, bro.
Coming up, have the Warriors all but wrapped up their series with the Rockets. That's ahead. This is First Things First. Back here with Antoine Walker. Rockets, Warriors, game two. Scary moment earlier in this one is James Harden's eye basically gouged by Draymond Green. He would leave and return, but his 29-point effort would not be enough, as the Warriors showed why. They are back-to-back champs. Curry and Klay combining for 41, while Kevin Durant continued his dominance, 29-5-4. Warriors win this one 115-109. Here's Kevin Durant on the importance of heading to Houston up 2-0.
Most definitely wanted to take care of home, especially after how last series went, losing two of them at home. So I think we're just a little bit more focused to finish games, no matter if we were up 15 and they still cut it down. And I think I love how we stayed poised through it all. You know, I think we only was able to do that because of what we went through in the first series. And, you know, so glad that we was able to finish it out at home, but we know these guys are even more dangerous at their crib. So us on the road, they're even more dangerous.
Antoine, wasn't a monster night from Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or any individual Warrior. How are they able to take care of the Rockets in game two?
Well, simply, they play with a lot of energy, a lot of effort, and you guys talked about it earlier. Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala, the way they're playing rejuvenated basketball. The Houston Rockets, the worst thing that could have happened to them was DeMarcus Cousins getting hurt, because it changed the whole complexion of the series. It made them go back to their original small lineup that's won games for them, and it took DeMarcus Cousins out the equation. Now Kenneth Faried can't play. He's not getting the minutes that we thought that he was going to get this series. Obviously, it takes away from their rotation. If you look last night, Golden State Warriors respected James Harden regardless of his eye injury. They trapped him. They forced him to make plays, forced him to throw the lob in the Capella. I mean, it had to be 6 or 7 times they tried to do that play, but because they're quick, athletic, Kevin Durant protecting the basket, it's the series has switched because now Golden State can play their Hampton Five, as you guys call it. I just call it their small lineup, and be effective. And then they get great play. I mean, Draymond Green looks like a different player. Obviously, you can tell he's healthy now. And he's making
plays. He had a
plays.
Toe injury during the season.
Yeah, so he's, you can tell he's healthy now. I mean, the dunk he got in the second half showed that he's got his athletic ability back. Mm-hmm. And I think he's the difference maker in the series. They cannot match up with Golden State's small lineup.
Well, the numbers say the Hamptons 5 is the difference in this series. They've played that unit 48 of, so exactly half of the minutes, and they are crushing the Rockets in those minutes. In the other 48 minutes, the Rockets actually have a slight edge. That Hamptons 5 unit has a near 130 offensive rating, which is a 110 offensive rating is great. 130 is almost impossible. And, you look at it right there. It's not in just spot duty. It's half the game. It's half the minutes that have been played in this series. But the point you're making about Iggy and Draymond, how good they look, and then when you add to it, what was so impressive to me about last night was the Warriors' level of engagement and attention to detail defensively compared to the Rockets' just casual, almost laissez-faire attitude with the basketball. Mm-hmm. The Rockets are not a high turnover team. One of the benefits of being iso ball is you don't turn the ball over a lot. The first quarter, they're kicking the ball around the gym. That was before Harden got hurt. Once he got hurt, they were still kicking the ball around the gym. They had 9 turnovers in the first quarter. They got out-rebounded by, they allowed 8 offensive rebounds in the first quarter. That's when they lost the game. It wasn't because of Harden's injury. It wasn't because Daniel House played poorly and Iman Shumpert missed shots. You turn the ball over like that, and you don't box out. You give the Warriors second chances. You're going to lose, especially when Klay rotating brilliantly, KD meeting people at the rim. You mentioned Draymond and Iggy. Hell, Steph, after he hurt his finger when his shots weren't falling, he played some of the best defense you'll see Steph play until he got in foul trouble. The Warriors' attention to detail defensively was spectacular last night, and to me, that was the difference.
Yeah, last night, man, I thought the Warriors were going to be able to win that game. The game Houston's going to look back on is game number one, when the Warriors were turning the ball over.
Yep.
They had 20 turnovers. You don't win that game. Steph is gimpy. Klay is gimpy. Back to game number one. What I worry about with Houston is, and the only reason why is because they said this. We had Daryl Morey. He sat here, and we talked about Houston during the regular season. They don't practice an awful lot. They have a veteran ball club, and they rest their players, do a little bit of shoot around, and they don't practice much. They don't do much on the court. Now in the playoffs, you see the teams that are supposed to be well-coached making adjustments because you have so much more practice time and the attention to detail. To me, the Warriors are up on the details of the sets, what they want to do. They want to take the ball out of Harden's hands. They know defensively, the Warriors, that they're trying to get Steph Curry in the pick and roll. So they do everything they can to make sure Steph is on the right guy. They know exactly what Houston's going to do. So for me, one thing that I want to watch, Houston has this huge break. They don't do a lot of practicing. Let's just see how many adjustments that they're going to make, because you can lie as much as you want to the people out there, Giannis, oh, we're not going to make adjustments. The playoffs are about adjustments. And how are the Rockets going to get their bench to be able to match the productivity when their starters go off the court?
And James Harden has to make a decision. When he brings it up the court, he's going to, if he wants to go one-on-one, he's going to have to not ask for the pick and roll. He's just going to keep it and go one-on-one and space the floor. They're going to trap him. They're going to force him to be a passer. And does D'Antoni have the discipline enough to play a small lineup? Do he believe in a Gerald Green on the floor, a Daniel House Jr. on the floor? We don't know if he believes
in him. They haven't done much that would convince him to play, more minutes.
So are you going to play a small lineup? It's Kenneth Faried. I think that's one of the reasons why they got killed on the glass. He's a hustle guy. He's a guy that gets you second opportunities. A guy's a big part of that. And if you want to look into the lineup, you look into the games. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I guarantee you when DeMarcus Cousins was playing, you may think it's a small point, but when DeMarcus Cousins was playing, you got two defenders on the floor, Cousins and Steph Curry, two guys that don't guard really well. Houston took full advantage of that. Can't do that in this series.
When the Warriors are playing like they played last night, it doesn't have to be spectacular, but they're all clicking. Do the Rockets have a chance to still win this series, Nick?
If the Rockets are going to have a chance, here's one guy that has to play like his name, his reputation, and his contract demands, and that's Chris Paul. The Rockets, when they acquired Chris Paul, Montrezl Harrell, Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, out the door, a little sign-and-trade, or essentially a sign-and-trade for Chris Paul. Everyone lauded that move. Last year looked like a brilliant move. Why didn't they beat the Warriors last year? Chris Paul got hurt. Chris Paul, total load management this year. Make sure he's ready for this moment. Sorry. Chris Paul has got to play like Chris Paul. Chris Paul, in the first quarter yesterday, which was critical because Harden went out, he was really good. After that first quarter, he's 3 of 10. He's 0 for 4 from 3. He gives you 10 points. Like, you can't get that from your second-best player when they're trapping Harden 35 feet from the basket, when they're forcing the ball out of Harden's hands.
And who is Chris Paul right now? Is he really that guy? Are we just granting him that because, oh, man, we like Chris Paul. Man, Chris Paul, man, if he could win a championship. But who is he right now? Can Chris Paul get you 30? We don't even know that. So even if they take the ball out of his hand, do you think so?
Well, I was going to say, I think 30, I don't think you can ask for 30 from Chris Paul, right?
But as an NBA player, man.
Last year was good, Chris. He was good at spotting up. He became a better three-point shooter. He figured out a way to play with Harden. Okay. I think this year, he hasn't been great all season long, got hurt early in the season, and he needs the ball in his hands. I thought you saw in that first quarter when Harden went out, he took over the game. He was really good.
Yes, but a lot of this NBA playoffs, it's about how good is the second player on that NBA team. And Chris Paul, at this point in his career, how good is he? And if you have the reputation of Chris Paul, like any of these other guys, if he gets hot, well, these other guys, Middleton almost had 30. If he had to play the fourth quarter, he would have had 30.
And that's why
Chris Paul should be able to do that to be able to take some of that burden from Harden.
And that's why there's such a burden on Harden, because we know the Warriors' third best player can get you 40. Like, Klay can go off at any time, and Chris Paul, even though he's never been a high-volume scorer, but can he get you, forget 30, can he get you 22-8? Right, you know what I mean? A game like that, which they need, they're going to have to get one of those games from Chris Paul in these two back in Houston, or they won't have a chance in this series.
Rockets down 0-2, game 3 slated for this Saturday night. Antoine, stick around. Coming up, should Kyrie Irving shoulder the blame for last night's loss? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First. We are joined by Super Bowl champ Martellus Bennett.
Hey, what up, man?
How are you?
How are you doing? Nice to see you.
Congratulations.
Well. Thank you. Thank
man,
you.
You've been dreaming for a long time, man. Everything you wanted to do, and now everything is coming together for you.
I never stop dreaming, man. That's the whole thing. I think that a lot of times people think that you can only have one dream in life, but you could achieve as many dreams as you want.
I love it. Well, we have your book here. We're going to talk to you about that in a second, just because
Chris was reading it. I just ordered it on Amazon, Dear Black Boy. We're going to talk more about it. But
I've sort of been following the behind the scenes of how it's coming together.
Jenna's on you on the gram now.
Big time. All right, Martellus, let's start with one of your former teams, the Patriots. No surprise here. They are favorites to win Super Bowl 54. They will have to do so without their all-pro tight end, Rob Gronkowski. All right, Martellus, there are all sorts of stories about you joining the Pats to replace Gronk. Did you come close to teaming up with your brother in New England?
Well, I mean, I thought about it. It would just be so awesome to play with your brother, and it's something that we always want to do. We were roommates in college, played together in college, and to kind of, like, have both our families and kind of play in the same city would have been really, really cool because we've been on separate sides of the earth for, you know, a decade. We see each other in the summer, so just to go to work every day. He's the person who pushed me to make it to the NFL, so I feel like if I got to play with him, my game would go to another level just being on the same team. But at the same time, I felt like what I was doing, my life's purpose right now with creativity is far more important to my community than another tight end. Or I think I have a bigger impact as an author and a creator and a writer than I could ever have as a football player.
Well, I'm sure it was a tough call, and I'm sure the Patriots would love to have you. And like you mentioned, it would have been cool to be back with Michael. For the Patriots, how tough of a void do you think it's going to be for them to fill with Rob Gronkowski retiring, with you not helping him out? How will they fill the role he played not only as a pass catcher but as a blocker?
I think the difference this year would be that they have the full offseason to prepare and change the offense. Josh McDaniels is very, very smart. So they're a team that adapts and changes things. That they will put the players in position to make the plays. I think it's harder to adjust in the middle of the season when you lose Gronk or he's out for a game than it is right now to have all this time to prepare and see what you have. They just drafted a big receiver that they won't be able to put in some situation similar to Gronk. So I think this much time is not going to be that big of an impact because they have so much time to learn what they want to do.
One other thing I hate in covering the NFL is the players that you cover, and you know, there's the difference between that. Yeah, it's hard to imagine a guy being an average player because all the athletes are great in their own right, mm-hmm. but there are tiers to this.
Right.
And when you lose a great player or even a good player, how everyone is just instant, we're going to replace this guy. Lots of these guys can't be replaced by one player. I think you make a great point by saying the offseason, because Gronk won't be replaced by one player, but the offseasons will be utilized to find out what everyone can do and what they can't do. And that's where New England, man, they have this thing down, where they're not going to put a guy in a position. If he is not of a run blocker, point of attack, he's not going to be in running situations. If he's a tight end, a little undersized, likes to run routes, they like to flex him out a little bit or put him in a position where you can't bump him. So they create people to be able to create that productivity better than any other team. So I look for several players to have to replace what Gronk did.
Yeah, and it's 2019. There's not many tight ends that can actually block, right? You're not getting tight ends that are dynamic. Like, that last class is gone. That class of tight end is pretty much gone. That's not a guy that's going to be dynamic at the point of attack and down the field that could run all the routes. So you only get to see that. So you usually have two guys. That's when you have your Frank Wycheck and then you bring in your Jimmy Graham. So they kind of just kind of find a good balance with those two guys. So what made me and Gronk so dynamic is that we both could block and we both could get down the field. So if you bring in Nickel to cover two tight ends, then we run it. Mm-hmm. If you try to stop the run, we could just audible and throw the ball down the field. A lot of times tight ends don't give you that dynamic because they know that when they're in, they're not blocking. They're not afraid of them as blockers.
Were you shocked to see how New England, predominantly a throwing team, even though Sony Michel was spectacular during the regular season, how they looked at the defenses and saw in the playoff the Chargers don't have a linebacker over 230. All right? Kansas City don't have a linebacker over 230. And they get to the Super Bowl, oh, the Rams don't have a linebacker over 230. So we're going to run the ball in these three games to be able to get their sixth Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that makes them, they don't really have an identity. Their identity is whatever it takes to win. And not too many times could do that. So many coaches have egos and they want to call the plays in a certain way. There's no ego when they call the plays. They call plays to win. So many coaches want to get the stats. There's players that want to get their stats and things like that. But New England's always been a team where they play to win. And whatever it is, every team's like, we had to run 30 times with LeGarrette when I was there, then we would run 30 times and everyone's happy. Because we're just trying to win. No one really cares about the stats. There's not emphasis on it.
So you laughed a little bit when we said that the Patriots are projected to win again this year. Tom Brady is as old as Tom Brady is. They don't have Rob Gronkowski. They haven't really done that much to change the team dramatically from last year, and yet no doubt they're back here in this position. Were you surprised by that? I mean, is there any doubt that this is the team?
It's just funny. It's like someone saying, like, a Marvel movie broke the box records. It's like, of course it did. It's supposed to break the box record every single time they drop one. So I think it's crazy that there's not a franchise where actually a Super Bowl or bust. Like, most of the teams are trying to win their division and hopefully get to the playoffs. New England, they're not even thinking about those things. It's thinking about Super Bowl. Like, how can we win a Super Bowl and what does it take to get there? Their path is paved differently than others. Others are just trying to get out their conference.
Last year, there were two remaining members of Tom Brady's draft class, him and Sebastian Janikowski, a specialist, one of the greatest kickers of all time, but it was a kicker, right? So now he's gone, and now it's just Brady. Can you put into terms how he's been able to sustain this longevity, not just the level of play, but just almost 20 years in the league now?
Funny thing, I used to have a giant schnauzer that was named after Sebastian Janikowski. I just liked his name. It was just one of the best names in the NFL. I think the key to Tom is avocado ice cream. You know, the way this guy takes care of his body, like he has my brother's, even like my brother's changing his stuff because he's like, everyone's adopting Tom's plan because everybody wants that longevity. And Tom likes to win. Like, he's driven by winning. And there's a lot of guys that you'll see that, like, their legacy, they may be very good at football, but that's not their legacy. I think Tom is one of those guys where he's going to go down, his legacy is tied to the game, man. He's a guy, a crazy thing I saw, one day we was at practice, I don't talk about it. No, y'all don't get many Patriots stories up here, but one day we were at practice and the defense is crushing us. Like, we can't complete no passes. No, sometimes they do the install, yes. It's just the right install. So we come into the into the meeting, and Bill always have bad plays of the day, and he's just, like, calling out Tom, you know, like, to Tom's, like, we have quarterbacks that can't make throws. I'm like, but this is Tom Brady. He can make all the throws. And I never see coaches really call the quarterbacks out in group meetings. So I was, like, looking at – I sit right behind Tom because I like the – I'm the quarterback whisperer. I like to whisper in their ear when I see things. So, so we get – after we break that
like
meeting –
like, I'm open on the next one.
Yeah. So after that meeting, I go to finish my workout or whatever, and Tom is in there doing dropbacks. Like, he's going – just doing dropbacks. Like, this is how this guy, he's pissed off. And the next day we go 33 for 33 or something like that at practice. And from then I was just like, oh, we're gonna be great. Because this was, I've never seen anyone that didn't shut down. He's like, all right, I'm gonna show you tomorrow. Like, he's just picking apart, take this.
Hold on, you said something really interesting at the end there. You said you've never seen anyone that didn't shut down. So in your experience, again, not name it, some guys, when they get called out in the team meeting like that, obviously guys less accomplished than Brady, they have a negative reaction.
Every guy.
Yes. I have coaches that tell you before they don't know how your personality is. Like, when I go to a new team, they're like, hey, there's some things we can call out on this tape. And, you know, when you come to a new team, and I'll just be like, and? Like, okay, like, I'm trying to get better, coach it up. Like,
But the guys that don't have that personality, how do they react to it? For guys that haven't been in, you've been, obviously, you know exactly the answer, but guys that don't have your disposition or maybe Brady's disposition, when they get called out, what's their reaction and what's the fallout from it?
You'll see a lot of guys just kind of like retreat. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, why you pointing me out, or why you doing this or doing that? Like, I'm this guy or that. Like,
yeah, they don't receive the information.
Yeah, they want to be coached in silence.
They want to be coddled.
Yes.
A lot like they have been at every level. Very few guys want to be critiqued and or embarrassed or showed up. Like, yeah. I'm trying to coach you. I'm not trying to show you up. I say everyone because I've only seen just a few people, and it's mostly not the talented ones.
Yes.
Very seldom.
It's the guys trying to make it.
Six-round pick that didn't want to make it. He's going to take coaching very well because he needs all the coaching he could get to be the player that he wants to be.
But is Belichick calling out Brady for Brady's sake or to show everyone in the room that everybody's accountable on that Patriots?
He don't discriminate at all.
No, he don't.
Oh, okay.
He call out anybody. Like, yes. You know what I mean, I just be in there sometimes. I try not to laugh sometimes because, like, the way he does it is funny to me. Like, I find Bill to be hilarious. And
funny guy.
But he calls everybody out. That's one thing. Like, that's the first team where I really been on where I felt everyone was equal. It was horizontal. There wasn't a vertical.
That's a really good leadership. How's your brother going to deal with it?
He's going to do very well. My brother, like, the thing about NFL players is they actually like structure and they like to be coached.
Yes.
And the issue is that a lot of coaches don't just coach. They want to change you as people. Change us as players. I don't need you. I got a father. I have a, you know what I'm saying? I don't need a dad. I need a coach to make me a better football player. And the Patriots, they focus on you as a football player. And I think a lot of guys really thrive in that environment because that's what we go to work for, to be football players. I don't really want you teaching me how to be a dad or, you know, like.
I don't need you to speak into my life.
Yeah.
I don't need a role model.
No, I don't need a role model. My dad's there. I got to call him every day. Last thing I need to do is hear that.
All right, Martellus, you have a new book. It's called Dear Black Boy. Tell us a little bit of the background. What made you decide to write this?
So Dear Black Boy is a letter to black boys all over the world. I wrote this, it originally started as a poem that I wrote after the Alton Sterling incident. When I was watching Alton Sterling, I saw myself, and what I saw in him, I saw me, but I felt like when the world saw Alton Sterling, they don't see the same thing that I see. And I think when a lot of boys look at them, black boys look at themselves, we see ourselves different from the world that sees us. Like, a lot of the world they look at us, they see danger. When I see the black boy, I see endangered. You know what I'm saying? So for me, like, this is a letter to tell black boys that their value is not tied to a sport. Like, you don't have to dribble. You don't have to catch a ball to be successful in life. There's so many other opportunities for you because a lot of times where we come from, we feel like someone rolls your ball and just says good luck. But like now it's like, all right, all these opportunities, how about we hand them a camera, introduce them to that possibility? That's how about we hand them a sketchbook so they know that it's all possible, because we don't really get to see ourselves in all these different fields. So we prepare them for this game of football, like they're working on their routes, they're running and trying to get faster from the youngest ages, working on their jump shots, whatever. But we're not really spending as much time preparing them for the game of life, which is the ultimate game they will have to win at.
And this is needed. When I was a little boy, man, I tried to find books to read on African Americans, men who were role models, because I didn't have a dad in my life. My mom raised 7 kids, and I was always in pursuit to try to look at black men, how I can be, who I could model my life after. And there are very few things outside the athletic realm that you can read. So it is necessary that you, I'm glad that you found it and were able to put it out there. And you've been dreaming about this for a long time. I've had you on other shows and everything. I'm glad you finally were able to get it out there.
That's what we talked about, the Pro Bowl.
Yes.
So the thing, what you just said, only 6% of children's books represent kids of color. Right? So you think about kids, reading is very imperative to the community. 76% of black boys aren't reading up to grade level by the 4th grade. Right? So if you think about the percentage, they're more likely to jump out. 1 out of 3 out of every black boy is likely to go to jail between the ages of 20 and 34.
Wow.
Right? And a lot of it stems from reading. Like a lot of them, they don't feel like they're reading up to reading level. And
seeing yourself as a young person depicted in the books you're reading is so, like, this is where representation matters. This is where Black Panther matters. And like,
yes,
and
Wakanda people, matters because
it
of that.
It absolutely matters because it let little kids that weren't just little white kids say, oh, I'm be a superhero.
Yes.
Like, and to Chris's point, we've seen popularized in pop culture, black kids know, okay, I can, entertainment industry, sports. Yes. Or music, or okay, that's one path, but things like this, you've talked about coding, you've talked about STEM things to where kids can see the other avenues for them. I'm curious about the artwork, though, on the front, because I admit I haven't read the book.
Yes.
The kids are running. I assume there's a reason that they're running from it. Having not read the book, there might be a dumb question.
What you're touching on right now is what I call black kids don't get to experience escapism. Like, all our stories, the stuff we give are our harsh realities. Like, we get He Got Game. Those are great films, but we don't get to go to Wakanda. We don't get to go to Hogwarts. We don't get to go be in Star Wars. You don't get to see represented.
You don't get to use your imagination.
We don't get to use our imagination. So when we have our, what we try to escape from our actual realities, we try to escape from where we are. We never get to dive into these other worlds. And escapism is important because when you visit other worlds, you realize your world doesn't have to be the way that it is, and you could change it. The way that this art is, the idea of this book is all these kids are running for freedom. And the freedom is this, is the freedom himself. I think that the ultimate freedom that any human being really wants to experience is the freedom to be themselves without the fear of being judged. So if you think about the artwork, there's no faces or facial expressions on these characters throughout the entire book. And that's mainly because every character is you, every character is me. So we should be able to see ourselves reflected in these stories because we are every single one of these boys running through this maze. So this maze is about the maze of life. How do we find it? There's so many different paths that kids could go down. They don't have to go through the same way to get to their finish line.
So talented. If you want to see more of some of the artwork that both you and your daughter has been so successful doing, check them out on Instagram. Seriously.
Shout out to Jet. She's the dopest artist I know.
And if I may say one thing real quick for our white folks watching the show. Black kids forever been reading stories with white characters, with what, what I mean, that are focused around, intentionally or not, a white protagonist. Just because it's called Dear Black Boy and it's a story to kids of color, doesn't mean the white parents out there can't buy this for their kids. Doesn't mean they can't get a lot from it.
And I think that's super important because we learn empathy through reading. So when kids, white kids get to read about black kids, they realize that black kids are just like them. They like magic. They like going out of space. They enjoy the same thing. So now we have something in common. And I learned that. And I get to put myself in your shoes through literature.
Marchels, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.